told you I do this shit for Vegas. About to shut the world down. World domination.
Well, people, we are back at it again with the High Buttenders Podcast. It is me, Jarrell, and you know I got my road dog, my partner in crime, Rocky. What's the deal?
Dude, trying to keep it positive.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah, that's the only thing we can do.
Holy shit. You know, the new year started out fun. The world is what it is, and it's very divided.
Changing.
A lot of changes going on, right. But that has not hindered the tourism in Vegas.
Not at all.
People think it is, but if you actually do your homework, you realize it really is not. It's actually flourishing, and we're actually having almost like pre-pandemic numbers coming to Vegas, so that's really good. And there's a bunch of shit going on too. There's a lot of singers in town and shit like that.
Yeah.
Right now, and you'll probably hear this by next week, but right now Champs is in town. Cam Jennings, welcome to the High Buttenders Podcast.
Thank you, Rocky. It's been a goal of mine to be on this podcast since I moved to Vegas. There were two podcasts that were on my list. The first one was Two Nugs, One Fatty. I did that a couple years ago. I don't think they're going anymore. But this was the goal. So it means a lot to me that you think that I have done enough in the industry to warrant a guest slot on the High Buttenders Podcast, because I do think that this is a very respectable name in the industry, and you know you've always had my support, so it's good to be here.
Oh, we appreciate you, man.
Dude, we appreciate you heavy.
Yeah.
Let's just start from like the groundwork. How did you end up in the comedy business? Because that's where it starts, right?
Kind of. I wanted to be an actor growing up. I was kind of the Zac Efron type, where I've been this big since I was 13, 14 years old. So they were trying to, prime me for the NFL. They were doing that to a couple other kids. Logan Wilson actually made it. Shout out Cincinnati Bengals. But that's where I was very early on in life. I got a back injury my freshman year. Kind of got dumped by the football guys and was worthless. I found my way over to the drama department, and they took me in. Made some new friends there, and that was kind of the first time I had to like accept a failure and reinvent my life and move forward, and freshman in high school. Fell in love with that. I actually ended up getting a job with Painted Pass Productions. I toured Germany, Belgium, and Luxembourg when I was 16 with Army Entertainment. And that led to me dropping out of high school because that was my becoming a man journey. And then I had to do something. So when I was 17, I was a pretty well-known drug dealer in Casper, Wyoming.
What were you selling?
I was selling pot.
Okay.
But there was a short stint where I got a little out of control, and the things that I was using outweighed the things that I was selling more.
So
I developed a really bad problem with ecstasy. I developed a really bad problem with cocaine. Used the cocaine to get off the ecstasy, and then ended up with coke addiction. It got to the point where I just can't do anything small, and next thing you know, we're a syndicate, and the main guy that, you know, he was selling all the drugs. He got busted. Myself and my other friend at the time, she moved somewhere else in the country. I moved to Denver, Colorado. That's how I got my dog Sweets that just passed away. It was her dog. We went down there. I moved to Colorado, laid low for a few months. And then I realized that nobody was coming after me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I left. I wasn't their problem anymore. I was still really young, so I didn't know what the severity of the situation I was getting into was.
Right.
I wanted to pick back up on those actor dreams because I had gone so far, and then I had, like, fallen into addiction, which I was still dealing with on the cocaine. But I decided I wanted to be an actor, and that I didn't want to go through the process of auditioning and headshots and all that, and a lot of my favorite actors started as comedians.
Yeah.
So I didn't necessarily have any kind of passion for stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
But I got into it, and I just went. And, you know, next thing you know, we're looking for sponsors, and we kind of turn out to be, you know, I had linked up with an elder comedian that he had the connections, I had the business dues, and we moved forward on that. And things just got really big, really out of control, really fast. Next thing you know, I'm on stage with Richard Pryor's daughter.
Shit.
That's crazy.
And I'm signing on their same management, and I'm leaving my Colorado company, and things are going crazy.
Your addiction still bad at this time?
Or? I am dead. I am so fucking lost on coke. It's not even funny. Shit. So, like, you know, we keep moving forward and things are getting better. And I sign on their management. I had to leave the comedy company that I had helped build. That caused some tension, but it was like, you know, everything forward. And after that, Rain Pryor was booked on a tour with Tracy Morgan. She did a run, and I was supposed to jump on with them on the second leg of that tour.
Yeah.
And during my blackout dates, right after that first leg of the tour is when Tracy Morgan got fucking clobbered by that Walmart truck.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad he's still alive, but I never got the chance to work with him, meet him. I don't even think he knows who the fuck I was.
Right.
Like, if I was lucky, my name may have come across in some early stuff of like, this is the guy that's about to go on tour with you. But
what if he's sitting there right now like, I wonder what happened to Cam Jones?
I don't,
who's an up-and-comer, man?
Well, I mean, I really was, but I was on the Denver scene. And,
yeah.
And the Denver, Colorado comedy scene has some of the best comedians you will ever see. It's the third largest comedy scene in the nation behind New York and L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And the standard to just be an open micer there is so much higher than it is to be a showcased comedian in most places.
It's crazy.
So there was a lot of competition. You know, they wanted you to be in the game for years before you got into clubs. It's like, fuck you, I'm trying to get famous right now.
Did you do the comedy in dispensaries in Colorado?
So that's where my specialty came out, because it's really hard to make stoners laugh.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to do 420 comedy, but the comedians get offended by the lack of drunk rowdiness of the audience.
Right.
So you have to learn to appreciate the chuckle. You have to learn to appreciate the energy in the room. And once you appreciate that, the sky's the limit. So I used to perform at the Speakeasy Bape Lounge, I Baked Denver when that was a thing. I did the Lazy Lion one time. I don't know if you ever knew about that place, but you want to talk about a legendary spot that was not all the way legal, but that was the first time I was like, how the fuck are you not getting raided?
What was it, the liquor? Selling liquor and a license, or?
No, they were selling pot.
Oh shit. Like, okay.
They were selling pot, no license, okay, cannabis club, and
that sounds like my kind of place.
So my boy Jamin Johnson, he was two doors down, open first. They open this thing next to him and they start breaking all the fucking rules, yeah. Right? And it was a wild place. Like, I wish people would have been there, but the Speakeasy was, they were trying to do things by the rules. Jamin was you know, he was like running for city council and all this shit. And I think it was the first cannabis, it might have been the first cannabis lounge in the nation, the Speakeasy Bape Lounge. But, you know, because of the mental health of just the counterculture industry in general, you know, they weren't able to be good neighbors. And Jamin, you know, the people that were coming to check his shit to regulate, he was like, hey, are you going to do anything about the guys just trapping next door? Because it's a fucking 2-ounce limit in Colorado and these guys will sell you a fucking pound.
Right.
So then he got like the reputation.
If they were even licensed, because right. I mean,
yeah. Then yeah. He got the reputation of a snitch and all this kind of shit. And it's bullshit. Yeah. Jamin Johnson's one of the most amazing fucking people ever, and was a huge start to my career, and is a big reason I'm here now. But at that time, a whole bunch of little smoker-friendly, bring-your-own cannabis clubs started popping up around Colorado Springs. So yeah. I'd play all of those. I was actually booked for the Denver 420 rally. For day two on 421, I had like an hour long set. I don't even know
shit. What
the fuck I was going to do with all that.
You had that much material?
Yeah. That was not the first time Miguel Lopez set me up for failure.
He gave you like George Lopez fucking hours.
You know, on like a festival.
That's an HBO series.
that's a Netflix special.
Yeah, so thank God that got canceled to the shooting that happened the day before that. I mean, we're in the midst of, what is it, James Holmes just happened, the Boston bombing just happened, and now it's fucking Easter. Right, and I'm VIP on the 420 stage. I'm standing next to my dude, medicated chef Big Sal Martin, who's still one of my best friends to this day. He's based out of Denver. We're standing next to each other. There's a picture floating around somewhere of me hitting a bong. He's hitting a dab rig, And not even 5 seconds later, you just hear fucking six shots ring off. And everybody, shit. Like, none of the crowd heard it, but we all heard it back there. So, like, and Lil Flip heard it on stage. And if I ever fucking meet Lil Flip, he and I are going to have some fucking words. But I don't even know if Lil Flip's a thing anymore. But the
He's definitely not.
Lil Flip's played out after this Cam Jennings made it. Lil Fox. I don't have a problem talking disworthy shit on him right now.
No. Because, shit, who the fuck am I, right? Because, like, bitch, who the fuck are you?
Well, my experience with him was he was on stage and he's like, oh, N-word shooting. And it's like, bruh. So next thing you know, all 100,000 fucking people at the Denver 420 rally rush the stage, trample Miguel Lopez, which, karma, you know, go through and, like, we're all running from, like, a stampede of buffalo, but they're just other humans.
Right.
And, you know, I was still with my ex-wife at the time. We had just had our daughter. She's, like, C-section scar healing running, and this is probably part of the reason she left me.
You got me out here for shit.
You know, and just running and running. So it was that experience and that time that kind of morphed me from being a comedian to a counterculture professional.
Yeah.
Because through all that stuff, comedy just wasn't so much fun anymore. Like, I was getting to the point I was making money off it. I did pay my rent, like, 2 or 3 months in a row just off of stand-up income alone. Because when you're a professional stand-up comedian, you're really a weed dealer.
Yeah.
Totally. But, you know, I was getting to the point that I had made it. But between struggles with my sobriety, my own mental health, and then just community mental health in Denver at that point in time, yeah. I stopped doing comedy. I don't think it was a really good decision. I think I'd have an HBO special by now if I stuck to it. But I didn't.
Why don't you just, you know, do it now?
Or write for another comedian?
I've done a little bit of that. I've helped a lot of comedians, you know, edit their stand-up sets and stuff like that. Yeah. Jason Gann, Wilfred, he runs his stand-up by me, and I help him time it out and everything like that. I have been quietly hitting a few open mics lately, just because had a health scare, you only live once, like, trying to do what makes me happy. I don't know if comedy is there for me anymore, though, because I didn't get into it to do it. I got into it to act.
Right.
And the result of it wasn't comedy. The result of it was sitting at the High Bud Tenders podcast with my friend Rocky, because I guess I made some waves in cannabis that didn't have anything to do with comedy. But
right.
when I enter a room in this industry and it's like, this dude ain't quite on, like, this dude's on this level, but why does it feel like he's on this level? It's because I've been so many places and I do have this reputation of people that have known me at my lowest and my highest.
Yeah.
I'm only 31 years old, so I'm still very much in that entrepreneur stage of, you got to fail 1,000 times before you succeed. And I hope I'm on like 750 or like 800 and we're like nearing the last 20% of shit that just hasn't worked out. But over the last 11 or 12 years in the industry that I've been here, my reputation has been in every corner. I have been the most honest guy and the best guy you could ever work with. I have also been the most strung out drug addict and don't trust that guy. And, you know, so when you really get into the cannabis community, I can become a little bit of a controversial figure just because the path to figuring out my own story it involved so many other people, and their paths to figuring out their story have, involved me, and it doesn't always go right.
Yeah. You said you made waves in the industry. When you say that, what do you mean?
I mean, I'm definitely a disruptor. most recently, my work has been around brick and mortar retail. So I have, you know, from whether it's one job or just my personal brand, the expectations I feel like the industry has on me is to unify the adult novelty and the counterculture retail community. The smoke shop people and the adult store people have not always been the best friends.
Right.
Amazon is a thing now.
Right, and it's a real thing.
The smoke shop people, you know, they have a little bit more protection there, but the adult store people, you know, when you're going into an adult store and you're not desensitized like me, like, there's a little bit of extra heartbeats and you're feeling like you're in a place you're not supposed to be. And even though in 2025 they're all couples boutiques and they should be very inviting to go into, there's still that part of our head that says, I'm not supposed to be here, somebody's going to see me here, somebody's going to take a picture, all that. So it is really more comfortable to order online. So that's why I encourage adult novelty manufacturers like XR Brands, like A Kitten, Doc Johnson, Maya Toys, to market towards smoke shops, because even though the smoke guys don't necessarily know how to sell the toys yet, if we put a couple years of commitment into that, there will be more brick and mortar business for those adult toy companies.
Yeah.
That when they're selling online, if it's their brand, they're not getting their full piece of it. And most of the time, what you're getting on Amazon is a not reputable brand, but most people don't dig that deep into what is a reputable sex toy brand.
Right.
You know, but that silicone, the medical grade shit, especially like lube. I've learned so much about lube. People keep trying to get me to eat it. I don't want to taste your fucking lube, but I'm really glad to hear that it comes out of like scientific labs. And like,
yeah.
Did you know that's the difference between lube and Glide?
No.
So if you see something that says Glide, that's not like 510K certified or something like that, I think. But there's a medical certification that a lubricant has to have to be called a lubricant.
There so are is other KY Jelly a lubricant?
KY Jelly, I believe, is a 510 lubricant.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't work with KY. The brands I work with are Swiss Navy, yeah. Joe.
Well, no, hardcore stuff. That's just the over-the-counter, and so I have to,
that's
like...
That's the most popular brand.
Yeah, that's
brand.
The most popular brand that, you know, we could think of, and sometimes people don't want to go into the sex stores. So for those folks, we wanted to cover that.
What I don't get is why they're selling sex toys at Walmart now. Because they're putting them behind a glass case. Oh, we're in Vegas. You haven't been over to the pharmacy? You can buy.
No. Is that in the pharmacy?
Yeah. And they're
in the pharmacy? Wait a minute. What?
Really?
And like, they don't say like great value on them or anything, but they're using their own manufacturing partner. I think it's like Plus One something brands. But, you know, I don't support buying toys in CVS, Walmart, etc., etc. CVS is a little different. I shouldn't say CVS, but Walmart especially, places where there aren't multiple options, where they're trying to take over the market and push out. My friends that have spent the last 25, 30 years of their life in handcuffs, just like the fucking weed people, in raids and tax shit and all the bullshit that we get, they've dealt with.
Please tell me that all sales are final.
Please.
I'm going to give my... This has actually been a fun controversy. So, yeah, don't ever return a fucking sex toy.
Oh, man.
But there's a company called Like a Kitten, and they have a lifetime warranty on all of their sex toys. So if your vibrator breaks, you can put it in a plastic bag, send it to them, they'll look at it, throw it the fuck away, and send you a new fucking sex toy.
That's great.
There are warranties, there are stuff like that, but yeah, never try to return a used sex toy. When it comes to that brick and mortar store, yeah. All sales are final.
Yeah, because usually that's the case. When you go to a sex store, you ain't returning shit.
No.
Right.
Hell no.
No.
Yeah, it's just disgusting. I wouldn't even,
if that's the tape didn't work, I would not have come back. If it got jammed in my VHS player... I'm not coming back with that shit.
Old VCR got
I mean, like, this head is thrown away. Defective.
You do have the energy of somebody that would still have a VHS player. Like, I feel like Rocky's a little retro, so if you...
Oh, my God.
If you were like, bro, we're about to watch the movie Speed on VHS.
Let me rewind it first.
Dude, I watched that shit yesterday.
I just watched that shit. I can show you on my HBO. I swear to God, I just watched it a couple of days ago.
That was the first movie growing up, that like the first rated R movie that my parents would like let me have this VHS right. in my room for. And bro, I forgot how bad the acting in that
Keanu
shit
Reeves
was.
Is so bad.
Dude, it's not even Keanu. Like, he's doing his best carrying the supporting actors. That is front to back. An amazing movie with the worst acting. Like, it's one of my favorite movies.
I watch it every time it comes on. Like, My wife loves it, so I get to have to watch that. I watch repeated films, and that happens to be one of the films. Anything with Sandra Bullock in it. That she's in Speed, right? That's
mm-hmm. Yeah, Speed. And then she did Speed 2, but
was Keanu, on a boat?
But Keanu didn't, and they're on a boat, and they just got like a Keanu fucking lookalike that's going up against William Dafoe.
Yeah.
And William Dafoe's about to bomb the fucking yacht with a golf bag.
Holy shit. Yeah, see, that's the sign of the times, though. That's the fun part of watching movies from the 90s.
You know what's crazy? Speaking of the 90s, have you seen how much VCRs are selling for now?
No.
They're like $300, $400, $500 for a fucking VCR.
For a used one?
Yeah, for a used one.
They're making new ones.
No, they're not, definitely not making new ones, for used ones.
I was going to be like, I got rid of that shit a long time ago. I mean, I know I make jokes and shit, but my house is very fucking high tech. I've been fucking watching all the shit on fucking streaming. Everything is what I'm doing. But I loved VHS, and then VHS is, you know, when I was that age, that's what you watched.
That was everything, yeah.
Right? You watched porn with the person you were with, and the shit used to get jammed all the fucking time because you watched it way too many fucking times on the same part every fucking time and broke that shit.
For real.
I thought Rocky and I were a lot closer in age than we turned out to be.
Yeah.
This conversation.
See? Everybody thinks that. Really? Everybody put that shit on record. No, that's
But like, when it's like, yo, that dude Cam, he just be thinking of shit. Because right now I'm like, oh, you mean nobody's manufacturing new VCRs?
No.
I'm like thinking about what percentage of the population still needs a VCR, how this is going to rise like record players. Yeah. it's $500 a piece. What the fuck am I doing in pot? You know how many people used to love VCRs?
He's like, I'm about to hit up every pawn shop and find all the VCRs.
I fucking worked at Champs for 2 years, bro. I got so many Chinese manufacturers in my inbox. Yes. I could make whatever I wanted for $5,000.
Dude, he's the one who hit up whenever we need something. Whenever we're going to get something, we're going to hit up him. So let me speak to that, actually, now that we're talking about the sex industry and sex toys and the ancillary business and all that good stuff. How do you bridge the gap between the cannabis industry and the ancillary sex industry?
I mean, it's all counterculture. The gap really only gets bridged by the store owners taking initiative to get educated on the other side's products.
Yeah.
It's the same consumer that wants to go to the store.
Right.
It's the desensitizing thing, because a lot of the people in the adult industry are like stoners, and you know what I mean. A lot of the people in the cannabis industry or the vape industry more so are just like dildos. Like, everybody's just fucking scared. At the end of the day, we sell pieces of plastic. Some of them have drugs in them, and some of them we rub up against us to make us feel like we have drugs in us.
There we go.
And there's no difference in the business. It's all Keystone margins. It's all the same type of distributors. There's less anxiety walking into a smoke shop than an adult store. But for the average person, they don't want to get pictured walking in a smoke shop either. You know, it's really just about money. If we leave the adult retail the way it is, if we leave the smoke retail the way it is, smoke retail is going to get regulated out of itself. So this is flavored vapes. This is a tax on kratom. This is THCA. You know, nobody buys fucking glass anymore.
Right.
We're sitting here smoking blunts, and you got bongs around as decoration.
No, I remember going to Champs like 5 years ago, and that was a huge focus. Was like, glass. You know, handmade glass, American glass.
It was a little bit cannabis culture.
Yeah, very much about the cannabis culture. There was, and speaking of which, is counterculture. One is either the heavy of the two, right? So if you go to the sex expo, you're not going to see as much of the cannabis, but you'll see some of it. You know what I mean? You'll still see some of the kratom and all that good stuff. Yeah. Same thing for the cannabis, like, you know, those that are selling to actual smoke shops and things of that nature. You know what I mean? So for that, I have to say I see very little, not as much as, you know what I mean, I'd like to see.
I mean, the only guy that's really pioneered it before I got here like that is a guy named Mike Savage. He owns a Full Circle Distribution. He makes everything from Kratom to, I don't think he does vapes. I know he does a lot of Kratom. He does a lot of other smoke shop stuff, male enhancement, but then he makes toys as well. He started making these big old full-size sex dolls that are wild, too. You know, so if you want a big sex doll for a good price, Full Circle Distribution, Miami Distribution, they're going through a rebrand. Yeah, that's really the only guy that was doing it like that. A lot of people tried, but adult stores would bring in glass. They wouldn't know how to care for it. It would break, shrinkage, you know. But there's a lot of areas, especially in middle America, like you want a good deal on a cool bong, you know, go to an adult store. It's not so much that way right now, but arcades, for example. Do you know what an adult arcade is? Are we educating the bud tenders
on what? Yes, please, let's I want to know myself. What is an adult arcade?
So
this, I think it just clicked for me.
Okay.
Is this
VR shit? No, is this...
No, you're adorable.
Oh, is it where you go and watch like porn in a booth?
That is the water pipe part of it, yeah.
Okay, that's what I was thinking when you said adult arcade.
Now, where do you think the bong part of it goes?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, man. So...
adult arcade, it just got in
there. Adult arcades are usually hookup spots for gay dudes. A lot of time women aren't even...
Glory holes.
Glory holes and everything like that. But the legal thing is you can go into this private booth, you can preview a movie that you might want to buy, and it costs you $10 to go into the booth. The fact that they're selling, you know, there's condoms and little lube packets and stuff right there. But the arcade thing is pretty played out. There are some arcades there that make a good example because most of them are non-smoking right now. If you are going to go have promiscuous gay sex and do poppers and all that kind of stuff in public, it'd be nice to smoke a cigarette every now and again. So anywhere that has an adult arcade that isn't selling nicotine vapes and looking the other way when they're smoking those in the place that they're looking the other way on a lot of things anyway, they're losing money. Why would you not sell vapes? I get why you don't sell cigarettes. You can't smoke in there anymore. Right. But you don't give a fuck if they vape. Yeah. Nobody gives a fuck where anybody vapes. I vape in Target. But there's a lot of money being left on the table right there on the smoke shop side. I mean... At least sell male enhancement pills. Rhinos and tigers and bears and shit.
Yeah. Like, what other items do you think would perform well in, like, the smoke shops?
I mean, there's a product that I love that, like, Cardi B endorsed. It's called Pink Pussycat. You know, you see that everywhere, but you gotta be careful with that. And these guys, I feel so bad for them because they're having to, like, chase motherfuckers down left and right for knocking off their shit.
Right.
So if you're doing male enhancement stuff, you need to make sure that you're getting it from the right company because almost half of that fucking industry right now is selling products that they're ripping off from...
The blue pill.
It's all basically, you know, you're not getting a Viagra Cialis prescription, but, you know, these are natural, blended, you know, whatever, that get your dick hard. And I don't recommend them for everybody to use if you're not having that issue, but for head shops to carry, if you were going to carry Kratom, if you're going to carry nitrous, if you're going to carry all of those things that... You remember when it used to just be salvia? That was the only thing that could get you high in a smoke shop and everything else is ancillary.
I had to get a few friends of mine out of shops because they'd stay out really late. You know, they do a lot of cocaine and then, you know, go to a shop that usually was a VHS, but like a video store in the front. And in the back, you had, I guess they're calling them arcades now. I love that.
They've always been arcades.
I didn't know. See, I didn't know that.
It's like a bathhouse without the water.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things that they always sold that I would be like, that would just blow my mind was head cleaner for VHS. Speaking of VHSs, but they would, ethanol, I guess it's ethyl, right? And they would spray it and inhale it, and it was a huffing product, but I guess it would enhance the sexual nature of that situation.
Are you talking about Maximum Impact?
I don't know. It was a cleaner of some sort. I don't know.
So you're talking...
It wasn't meant to do... I don't think it was meant for... It's supposed to be. I guess somebody decided to huff it because they knew what was inside of it. But.
So there are two identical products with the same name and the same, you know. So What you're referring to is something that's sold as a videotape head cleaner.
Right.
Which back in the day was very necessary for VHS.
Right.
These are also known, and you can't sell them, as poppers. Poppers are an amyl or butyl nitrate something that you inhale, and if you want to be on the receiving end of anal sex, it makes it easier.
Oh, okay.
That is also another product, though, that I've noticed for some reason straight women my age are getting real into, which I'm about.
Dude, that shit's been covered. That is a real thing.
So these videotape head cleaners are also another product that starts an adult that every smoke shop should carry because people look for it. Why wouldn't you want that money? You have kratom, you have nitrous, you have all the other stuff.
Right.
On the adult side, most of the income from an adult boutique comes from the head cleaners, the nitrous, that, believe it or not, that started as an adult thing. That came over to smoke, you know, because we're all such whipped cream enthusiasts.
Yeah.
But if you abuse it in the way that you're not supposed to, that it's illegal to sell, that you don't do it that way and don't ever encourage anybody to, if you inhale nitrous, it is supposed to give you the same feeling as like getting choked out during sex without the actual pressure on your throat, but give you that head high.
Oh, that's scary.
So, oh, it's fun.
Yeah.
Kids,
do not try this at home. The butt centers, do not try this at home.
Oh, Cam already did it for you.
Yeah.
That's the thing behind that. That's, you know, people buy it to abuse it, and it's not up to the store owner to know what they're going to do with it after they leave. They better be making themselves some fucking whipped cream.
Right.
But that started in adult. That carried over to smoke. That's an example of a crossover product. Enhancements are a crossover product, and the amyl nitrate stuff, the head cleaners, the quote-unquote poppers, those are big money for retail. Those are also things that you can't sell on Amazon, you can't sell online, and you have to go to a brick and mortar for.
Right.
So even if it's like, I don't know that I want to sell that, it's like, well, neither does fucking Amazon. So you may as well make your money where you can, because right. Fucking big internet daddy is coming for you.
Fuck yeah. So dude, what if I have to ask, do you have any preference between the cannabis industry and the adult sex industry?
I mean, no offense to the people listening to this podcast, but it's the adult novelty industry all day. I've gone through some things in the smoke industry, including right now. I've fallen a few times, and it's always been the adult novelty industry that picked me up.
Nice.
You know, back to the come up story that we were talking about, just going right on track there. You know, I stopped doing comedy. I was working as the co-organizer for the 420 rally for a while. That fell apart because they didn't want to fucking pay me. They wanted 8 hours a day out of me with no money, so I couldn't do that.
Nice.
around that time, lost my train of thought a little bit. You know, I had to go back to selling weed, right?
Right.
And I was running probably 10, 15 pounds a week from Colorado to Wyoming, just as I could get it. I had people that I put on. I had probably 6 or 7 different employees that were all on front, and that's how I was staying alive. Me and the wife broke up. Things with the comedy company went down. I'm still addicted to fucking coke. Things are not great, you know.
Right.
So I'm selling weed back and forth. I'm finally on my game. I'm making more money than I ever fucking did. Like, I figured out margins at this point, not right. just selling weed to sell weed and get a free eighth or a quarter. Like, I am doubling, if not tripling, my money, and I'm the lowest price in town. Fuck you.
Right.
Still, again, with drugs come poor mental health and come poor decisions. And even though I wasn't, like, the week before, I had just fucking done a whole bunch of shit, but I was clean that week. I was visiting my daughter. Everything was good. Like, I always had my head on my shoulders, but my girlfriend and I got in an argument over our dog pissing on the floor in a Motel 6, and I had weed on me, and we drove away. They called the cops on us for domestic violence. As soon as they realized I wasn't beating her, they beat the shit out of her themselves.
Oh, shit. Oh no.
And, you know, I was, at that point in time, facing 21 years in prison for pot. I was 20 years old. I was facing 21 fucking years for pot. It was 10 years for possession with intent, 10 years for conspiracy. You know, so not only did I have weed that I was going to sell, I thought about it too. And I talked to people about it too. And then my favorite, one extra year misdemeanor for interference with a peace officer. That one was real. They were all real. So I went down really hard. Nobody from the 420 days, nobody from cannabis, nobody from the comedy days even reached out. I was completely alone. I learned the definition of fair weather friends. It was a really young lesson on, you know, picking your circles wisely and understanding that you are a product of your environment, and you can only control who you are as a person by controlling where you go and where that environment turns you into.
Yeah.
You know? When I was there, I got released back to Colorado on probation, and they required me to have a job. They also put the shit on my record that made people not want to hire me. The jobs they were telling me to get, I'd sit down and I'd interview, and I've always spoken like this, and I've always been very direct, and I'm overqualified. You're smarter than the fucking GM. They don't want you to work for them. Like, you're going to cause some problems, which I do when I'm in environments of just people that aren't very smart. So, like, that didn't work out, and I'm in this weird middle space, and, I remember I was trying to sell Cutco to, like, all the 420 people, and they're like, Cam, I thought you were sitting down with, like, a proposal. I thought I was, like, about ready to spend 50 grand. You want me to buy some knives? Get the fuck out of my house. What happened to you? And I'm like, I'm still 20 years old, guys, you know? So, this is like the up and down thing, and where my story's just in every corner. So, I went back to Colorado, can't find a job, I'm on probation. The only place that would hire me was Pleasures Entertainment in Denver, and it was selling sex toys. I thought that was cool, because it was like, I went from bongs and worked from, you know, smoke shop to smoke shop a little bit, and sold pot, like, I can sell some dildos and porn. Like, this sounds on brand for me. So that's where it started.
It does, bro.
And they let me know that it's like, you know, this is a good job. It's hourly plus commission. So we'll give you $9 an hour, which at that point in time was actually really fair. Plus, if you hit these numbers, you'll get 5%, 7%, or 9% of the drawer. And one thing about me is I don't actually watch porn much. I watch some kink porn, but like, I don't know all the porn stars, all that other stuff. I don't know how to sell that shit. So I got invested in the toy part, because I do masturbate. And I learned all about the toys and all about the products, because that's where the commission was. And if I could sell two of these $100 vibrators a day, everything else would come in, and I'd always hit that commission. So my $9 an hour would turn into $17.26 an hour, and I'm really killing it. The only downside is I have to clean the arcade every night.
When I made the connection, I thought about that. I was like, wait, he has to clean that? That's what you did for years?
Lord have mercy. The interview was at the biggest location they had. And he's like, you have the job, but it's peak arcade hours. You have to go back there, touch the back wall, make it back out here alive, and if you still want the job, it's yours. And I did, but oh my God. Like, I understand why that was part of the interview. Wow. You know what I mean? It was scary, dude. It was like Rammstein concert opening scene of fucking XXX scary. Like, it shouldn't be this scary, but oh my God, it's scary.
Yes. So please tell me the end result is that the people are much more professional and you love the industry because,
They are. They've had my back every time I've fallen. The adult industry has been there to pick up the pieces. And that is where I owe my loyalties. I smoke more weed than anybody I know. I have a pot leaf tattooed over my left nipple. I am committed. I am a stoner. I have a lot of influence in that space. But when I consider myself a professional, I do consider myself an adult novelty industry professional more than I do a cannabis industry professional or otherwise, because you know, that's where I got screwed up a lot. I can't work at a dispensary. I have a cannabis belt. My rights got restored last September. I might be good now, you know, but cannabis felons like me, I didn't do any time.
Yeah.
They told me I was gonna spend as much of my life as I had lived up to that point. Like, guess what? The next half is in prison, buddy.
Yes.
All because your back hurt and you fucking didn't want to take Oxy and you went from there. But, I can't work in the cannabis industry like that. So when you met me, I was doing a lot of the licensing stuff for Wilfred, and a lot of my head deals would fall apart because people would invite me to, you know, invite me or him or whatever out to their cultivation center. I didn't even want to step foot in it. I didn't want to put them at risk.
Right.